Your control assessment's going to ask you to explain the successes that John F. Kennedy had as American president. And the first success we want to look at is the fact that he became president at all. John F. Kennedy was one of the youngest men ever to have been president. He's also the first Roman Catholic ever to have been president. Up until that time, all American presidents had been white male Anglo-Saxon Protestants. They had come from a very particular background. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, he comes from a different background altogether. And he was certainly from a family that was very rich. He was certainly one of the American elite. But he was Roman Catholic, and that was a problem in America. In America, the Deep South, the southern states, were extremely important for anybody who wanted to be elected, and they were predominantly Protestant. And there was a great fear at the time in the 1960s, actually it goes right back in American history, back into the 19th century, that Roman Catholics couldn't be trusted. Roman Catholics couldn't be trusted because they would take their instructions from the Pope and not from the American authorities. So the idea was that if you elected a Roman Catholic official, somehow you were putting the papacy in control. Not something that we'd recognise in Northern Ireland. It wouldn't be a problem today in America. For example, Mitt Romney recently ran for president. Now, he failed, but he ran against Barack Obama, and Mitt Romney is a Mormon. So for many Christians, that isn't even a Christian religion at all. Mormons would claim that they are. But the fact that a lot of evangelicals and a lot of Roman Catholics wouldn't even recognize Mormons as Christians, yet Mitt Romney, as a Mormon, could run for president, is to a large extent due to JFK. JFK was a Roman Catholic. He knew that he had to break the mold. An extraordinary thing about John F. Kennedy is he knew how to bluff, and he also knew how to grasp a challenge, to take a bull by the horns. What Kennedy did in his presidential campaign is he actually accepted an invitation to the Greater Houston Ministerial Association. Doesn't sound particularly big, but what essentially would happen was he would give a speech to 300 Protestant ministers, exactly the sorts of people that wouldn't trust a Catholic president. So there were 300 Protestant ministers in the room. Kennedy addressed them, and the press would be there. The fact that John F. Kennedy was going in front of an audience of 300 ministers, Protestant ministers, to talk about what he would do as president. And while he didn't convince the majority of the people in the room, the majority of the people in the room liked him. John F. Kennedy had something called charisma. C-H-A-R-I-S-M-A, charisma. And the idea of charisma is that it's almost as if the politician stands for something bigger than just themselves, bigger than just their party. And we'll come to this again in a moment. But Kennedy was selling a new image of America, of a new America, of a new deal for Americans. He was the future, he wasn't the past. People in the room liked him. But what he offered was an argument. He basically said that there was no reason for Protestants not to vote for him. He said, "I'm not the Catholic candidate for president, I am the Democratic Party's candidate for president who happens to be Catholic. I do not speak for my church in public matters, and the church does not speak for me. So I'm not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic Party's candidate who happens to be Catholic. I do not speak for my church in public matters, and the church does not speak for me." That was quoted through newspapers right the way across America. He said, "I believe in America where the separation of church and state is absolute." He said he believed that in America where a Catholic cardinal or bishop could not tell a Catholic politician what to do. And he also believed in an America where Protestant politicians couldn't tell people how to vote. And people accepted that message. This is very important in American history, that the church and the state should be kept separate, that the American government shouldn't back any one church. So there's no equivalent of the Church of England in America. And what Kennedy was doing was saying, look, that's the America I believe in. I believe in the America that was set up by our founding fathers centuries ago. This is the way America was always meant to be. And if you're going to tell me that a Roman Catholic president shouldn't take orders from the Pope, I agree with you. He shouldn't. But then Kennedy has them. He says, if you're going to tell me that a Roman Catholic can't accept orders from the Pope, well, neither should a Protestant minister be able to tell his congregation how to vote. You can't have this both ways. You can't tell me that I can't take orders from a bishop and then say, but you're allowed to tell your congregations who they should and shouldn't vote for. You've got to be consistent. And he pushed this argument through. Now, that's an important moment in American history. Because at that stage, it became absolute, that it became just accepted that really politicians shouldn't be going to the church to hear what they should do. And there's been a huge disagreement in America ever since. So it's an important moment in American history to understand America today and to understand the rise about abortion and about what marriage means. This goes back to Kennedy pushing forward this argument that politicians really, when they're a politician, they should be leaving their religion at home, they should be leaving their Christian beliefs at home, and they should just act for the good of the people, for the majority of the people. And some American politicians agree with that, and some disagree with that. There's disagreement on it today. But that's an important moment, Kennedy's speech in Houston. But the other thing that it did that was it completely broke the mold. It meant that Kennedy was elected. Now, by the narrowest of margins, Kennedy was barely elected. He just, you know, squeezed through. But he got there and he became the first Catholic president of the United States. And now today, people wouldn't think twice about voting for Roman Catholic. In Northern Ireland, there would seem to be a lesson there that if you're going to say, well, you know, you can't trust the other community because they belong to a particular religion, and you can't trust that other religion, well, the logic would seem to be, well, they shouldn't trust us either. And we maybe do need to take a leaf out of Kennedy's book and begin to ask ourselves the question, well, to what extent should we allow church and politics to mix? To what extent should we be allowing churches to tell people who they should and shouldn't vote for? But leave that to one side, because your essay is really going to focus in on explain Kennedy's successes. It's not going to ask you to talk about Northern Ireland, but just keep that in mind. So the first success Kennedy has as president is to be elected president. And he's elected president as a Roman Catholic, and that changes things in a huge way. There's no longer just white Anglo-Saxon men who become president. He's also a young man who's become president. He's not one of the older guys who generally got the post and who'd been hanging around party politics for years. He's new and he's youthful. And this leads to really the second thing we want to say about Kennedy. He understood that America had to sell itself to the world. And to do that, he wanted to sell America as being young and new and energetic. So when he accepted the presidency, his inaugural speech, he said, you know, let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike, that the torch is passed to a new generation. He told people not to ask what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. He said that the American people would bear any burden, that they would accept any price to defend human rights around the world. And what he was doing is he was giving America a mission. He was like a preacher, and he was saying Americans stand up for more than just business, more than just lining their pockets. Americans want to defend human rights around the world. And Americans are about sacrifice. Now, you might want to compare President Kennedy's speech to George W. Bush's speech after the Twin Towers collapsed. After the Twin Towers collapsed in America, after the 9/11 attacks, George Bush's, made a speech saying America should just go around there just behaving as they had before, that they should go to Disney World, that they should spend their money, that they should go shopping. There was no message there about sacrifice. Kennedy stands up on his first day as president, as he swore in, and he says, listen, America is about sacrifice. It's about asking what people can do for their country and then asking what can our country do for the world. He set up two projects. The first was called the Peace Corps. And the Peace Corps was young people would come forward and volunteer to go around the world and to help out in really charitable organizations and help poorer parts of the world, to act as ambassadors from America. And this became an incredibly popular idea. Many young people, after hearing John F. Kennedy speak for the first time, signed up for the Peace Corps. And he also created something called the Alliance for Progress, because he looked at South America and he looked and he seen the incredible poverty there was there, and he realized that communism could get into South America. So he set up this Alliance for Progress, which was a little bit like a Marshall Plan for South America. And over the next 2 years, he would put in $1.5 billion into South America to try and raise living standards. So what he's doing is he's giving America a mission. We're going to make the world a better place. We're not going to do it the way the communists do. The communists, when they try and make the world a better place, send in tanks and bombers. America is going to send in volunteers and it's going to send in money. This is how America makes the world a better place. So he says Americans will bear any burden to protect freedom around the world. And America doesn't ask what its country can do for the people. It asks what the people ask, what can we do for our country? So he makes America mean something important. And that gave Kennedy incredible power. It gave him incredible political influence. It made him somebody who was likely to be re-elected. The third thing he does is he invests huge amounts of money in the space race. Now, to some extent, you know, putting a satellite into orbit doesn't seem to be the best, you know, use of American money when you can spend that money on tanks or bombers. But there are two things that work here. First of all, if you can send a rocket into space and get that rocket to fly right the way around the globe, well, there's no reason you can't attach a nuclear missile to the tip of it. Now, the Russians seem to be getting ahead in the space race. They were putting satellites into space ahead of Americans. And that scared Americans because they thought, well, maybe the Russians are going to get better missiles than our missiles. So there's a military side to this. But there's also a message, and Kennedy understood that. He understood that countries around the world were going to go with a nation that had the best technology. And so he didn't want Russia to look as if communists had the best technology. He didn't want it to look as if the USSR was the place you wanted to be if you wanted to be on the cutting edge of science. He realized that America needed to look like America had the best scientists. And so he put huge amounts of money into NASA. He set up the goal of putting a man on the moon. Now, he wouldn't live to see that happen. But the fact was that he set that goal. He set America this huge scientific challenge. And it made America look like America was the place to be. America was the way of the future. So his successes, first success was simply becoming president as a Roman Catholic. His second success was giving America a mission, giving America a place in the world, giving America a message that could challenge the message of communism. Communists would get into countries and would try and take those countries over to say, we are going to make the world a better place. Kennedy gives the American people a different way. He says, no, we're going to send in volunteers, we're going to send in money. This is our mission in the world. However, Kennedy's greatest successes were certainly in foreign policy. And although part of the reason he was so great in foreign policy, in other words, in his dealings with Russia and in his dealings with other nations, one of the reasons that he has this success is that he can motivate Americans, he can give Americans this mission. But a lot of it can also be traced back to his first and greatest failure, and that's the Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961. Now, that was a nightmare for Kennedy. Kennedy comes into power and a guy called Fidel Castro has taken over in Cuba. And there's no doubt that Fidel Castro rebelled against a very, very corrupt regime run by a guy called Batista. And Castro kicked Batista out. And people in America reckoned, yes, this was great. This was a fine thing to do. There were very few people in America, in terms of ordinary people on the street, who were cheering for Batista. But then Castro decided, well, look, a lot of the land in Cuba is owned by foreign American companies. I'm going to give it back to the ordinary people. And at that, the Americans began to say, well, that seems like a bit of a communist thing to do. And so the companies who were losing money began to put pressure on the government. The government began to suspect Castro of being a communist. And this was all taking place in the presidency of Eisenhower. That's the guy who came directly before Kennedy as president. And President Eisenhower approved a plan for training 1,400 Cuban exiles. These were 1,400 people who left Cuba when Castro came into power. 1,400 of these guys were trained by the CIA in Guatemala. And they were trained and they were supposed to go in and invade Cuba and take it back. Now, Kennedy comes into power in the middle of this plan. And he misreads a memo. He misreads some information from Eisenhower, and he thinks that Eisenhower has given permission for the invasion to go ahead. He didn't pay attention to the detail. Eisenhower basically said, yeah, let the training go ahead. Train these guys, but Eisenhower did not say let them invade. Now, Kennedy's got this problem. He's got 1,400 trained guerrilla commandos in Guatemala, who, if they get particularly annoyed, could take Guatemala over, could cause all sorts of problems for Kennedy. His military advisors come to him and say, listen, let these guys invade. Let them invade Cuba. We know exactly what they're going to do. They're going to go under this beach, which became known as the Bay of Pigs. Don't worry, it'll be fine. We'll give them plenty of air support. And let them invade. And look, if it doesn't work out, they can escape into the mountains and sort of act like sort of guerrilla campaigners out there. They can act like terrorists out there. They can undermine Castro. What nobody bothered to do was to look at the maps and realize there was no way to the mountains from the beach. What they also refused to admit was that the Castro government was incredibly popular in Cuba. What they also neglected to look at was the size and the training of the Cuban army, which was starting to get support from Russia. And so what happened was, in the Bay of Pigs invasion, 1,400 men went onto the beach and were slaughtered, captured, paraded. Kennedy immediately went on to TV the next day and apologised for his role in it. But at the end of the day, Kennedy made one huge mistake in that invasion. He listened to his advisors, and then at the very last moment he changed his mind and chickened out. He listened to his advisors and let the invasion go ahead. When the invasion started to falter, his military advisors came to him and said, listen, we have to send in air support, we have to send in American troops to help these guys out. Kennedy wouldn't do that. He didn't want all-out war with Cuba. He didn't know how Russia would react. And so he chickened out. He wouldn't go the whole course. Now, what Kennedy tried to do, I mean, he went on TV the next day and said, oh yes, I accept it was my responsibility, I accept it was my fault. And then his pressmen ran out and told the newspapers, yes, but it was really President Eisenhower's idea. It wasn't Eisenhower's idea. Eisenhower and Kennedy had a meeting afterwards, and Eisenhower went through Kennedy and tore shreds off him. Eisenhower had been in charge of the Allied forces in World War II. He was a man who understood war. And he said to Kennedy, listen, when you go to war, you go to war 100%. You're either in or you're out. And what you did was just show weakness to the Russians. You made it look to the Russians as if Americans will chicken out when the going gets tough. This was something you either did or you didn't do. You don't do it by half measures. And that was your crucial mistake in the Bay of Pigs. Once you sent those troops in, once those troops started to fail, you had to be prepared to send in the American army to back them up. So your problem was you didn't stay the course. You try to do it by halves. When it comes to war, either you do it or you don't. Kennedy, from the Bay of Pigs invasion, even though it was a disaster, takes away two things. First of all, check the details for yourself. Don't just listen to your advisors. His advisors came to him and told him the Bay of Pigs would be easy. Those 1,400 men would walk over and stroll through Cuba and topple Castro, and Cuba would be pro-American again, and everything would be wonderful. And Kennedy just listened to them. He didn't check the details. He didn't ask any questions. He didn't say, you know, how can you be sure? So the first thing that Kennedy learned was, check the details for yourself. Be critical. When you're in leadership, criticize everything. Check everyone's argument. Make sure that people are talking sense. Don't just listen to your advisors. The second thing he learned, when you go to war, you're either all in or you don't go in at all. When it comes to war, you either commit everything or you commit nothing. That will become extraordinarily important in Kennedy's foreign policy and in terms of his career. He was told about Laos, which is a country near Vietnam. Laos nearly became America's first Vietnam War. Laos was turning communist. There was a danger it could turn communist. His generals told him, go in. We can go in and we can win. Kennedy asked one of the generals, how do you know we can win? And he says, well, if you let me lose nuclear weapons, I absolutely guarantee victory. And at that, Kennedy thought, no, we're not going to war. We're not going to war in a country. When he looked at the maps and when he asked details, American soldiers would be fighting in jungles, far from home and territory they weren't used to and terrain they weren't used to. And he decided, no, we're not going to go to war in Laos. He decided to bluff instead. He made it look to the Russians as if he was getting ready to go to war, but he had no intention of going to war. And then eventually the Russians would back down. They would allow a neutral government in Laos. They didn't allow it to go communist. Because Kennedy learned that you can bluff. He learned to bluff, but he had also learned if you go to war, you go all in. And he wasn't ready to do that in Laos. Well, then we come to Kennedy's second big crisis. His first crisis is Cuba. His second crisis is Berlin. Berlin, remember, is in East Germany. And it's surrounded by communist East German territory. But the problem with Berlin, and this was faced by Walter Ulbricht, who was the leader of the communist leader of East Germany, is that every month thousands of East Germans were going into East Berlin, crossing over into West Berlin, and then jumping on a train getting into West Germany. He was losing too many people every month, his best workers, his best minds, to West Germany. And the East German economy couldn't cope. East Germany was on the point of collapse. And Ulbricht came to Khrushchev, who was the president of Russia, the chairman, and said, Mr. Chairman, we've got to get this to stop. A meeting was arranged between Kennedy and Khrushchev in Vienna. And at that meeting, Khrushchev had sensed weakness in Kennedy. He had sensed this man back down at the Bay of Pigs. And he decided that he was going to do something about Berlin. He wanted Berlin to be completely and totally in the hands of East Germany. He told Kennedy, Berlin, West Berlin is like a bone in my throat. I want it out. It's choking me. I want it stopped. He said that basically he was going to sign a treaty with East Germany that would allow East Germans to kick the West Germans out of West Berlin. So, in other words, West Berlin would become part of East Germany. There would just be the city of Berlin. And he was ready to go to war for that. And in that meeting in Vienna, he bullied and he shouted and he ranted and he raved at Kennedy. Kennedy said afterwards, he treated me like a little boy. But Kennedy had learnt about bluffing. Kennedy had also learnt to stare his critics in the eye. And so what he said to Khrushchev, after sizing Khrushchev up, he reckoned Khrushchev was a bully, but he also knew that Khrushchev wasn't insane. He knew that Khrushchev did not want a nuclear war. And Khrushchev said, listen, I'm ready to go to war for East Berlin, I'm ready to go to war over West Berlin. Kennedy said, then, Mr. Chairman, there will be war. it's going to be a long, cold winter. And he was warning Khrushchev. There's a line in the sand here. You can bully, you can bluff, you can bluster, you can shout, you can rant, you can rave. But you and I both know something. I've got more nuclear missiles than you. And no matter what you do, Mr. Chairman, no matter what you say, Khrushchev, we both know if it comes to war, I'm going to win and you're going to lose. And Kennedy was right. At that stage, America had many more nuclear weapons than Russia did. He certainly had many more nuclear weapons that could actually strike Russia. Russia had plenty of nukes that they could drop on Europe, but very, very few that could hit the American homeland. Kennedy did not want a nuclear war himself. He was absolutely convinced that it should not happen. He said afterwards, all wars start from stupidity. He wasn't ready for this sort of war with Russia. He didn't want a nuclear war. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, he would say that nuclear war, if it happened, would be the ultimate sign of failure. But at the end of the day, he says, he was ready to draw a line in the sand. No, West Berlin is not going to go. That's my line in the sand. You're not going to step over that. You're not going to go there. And I'm ready to go to war. He went back to America and he went on TV and he said, I'm going to ask Congress for more taxes. I'm going to raise the size of the army. I'm going to get ready to take Khrushchev on. And the American Congress gave that to him. He also got his defense secretary to make speeches boasting about America's nuclear strength. And that left Khrushchev back in Moscow realizing that Kennedy wasn't going to be bullied. He wasn't going to be pushed around. He realized he couldn't go to war. Ulbricht came to Khrushchev with an idea. He said, listen, Kennedy has said that he will go to war for West Berlin. But Kennedy didn't tell us what we could do in East Berlin. Kennedy has never said, just listen, I'll go to war to protect the people of East Berlin. He said, I'll protect West Berlin. So Ulbricht says, we'll build a wall. We'll build a wall down the middle of Berlin that separates East Berlin from West Berlin. And that'll stop the East Germans going into West Germany. That will stop them escaping into West Berlin, getting into West Germany. That'll stop the bleed. That will stop all my best minds going into the West German economy. The wall went up. The pictures went around the world. And the East German troops were actually shooting East Germans trying to get into West Berlin. Kennedy did nothing. He made sure the newspapers and the news film reels had pictures of him out sailing while this was going on. He was signalling to Russia, I'm not going to go to war over this. My line in the sand was West Berlin. You weren't going to touch West Berlin, but I'll accept you building the wall. And so that was an incredible success for Kennedy. He realised how far you can push. He realised that if you push too far over the wall, you're going to end up going all in. You're going to end up with a nuclear war. He knew that he couldn't let Khrushchev push him around. And so he did incredibly well there over in the first Berlin crisis. Khrushchev was humiliated, though. And that sets up the Cuban Missile Crisis to some extent. Khrushchev sent Russian tanks into East Berlin. He allowed the Russian tanks to train their weapons on American tanks. It created a very tense situation in Berlin. And the other thing that Khrushchev did is he set up a deal with Castro because he realized that America had a huge advantage in nuclear weapons and he had to do something about that advantage. He had to take that away. Now, his missiles couldn't get all the way from Russia to America, but Cuba was right on the American doorstep. If he could get some short-range missiles into Cuba, if he could do that, if he could manage that, he could take away the American advantage with one stroke. So then we come to the Cuban Missile Crisis, 1962. Everybody's agreed this is Kennedy's finest hour. Guy comes into President Kennedy and says George McBundy McGeorge Bundy, the National Security Advisor, with pictures showing that the Russians have set up nuclear missile sites in America. In Cuba. Nuclear missile sites that are able to strike America. Immediately, some generals want to go to war. Immediately, some generals are saying, listen, we're going to send an airstrike. We're going to be able to knock those sites out. And this is the temptation. This is the temptation that presidents face. Military action, it seems decisive, and it seems swift, and it seems like it's going to make all your problems go away overnight. And it looks so cool on TV, all those big, powerful fighter jets flying overhead and dropping their napalm bombs. It just looks like you're blowing your enemy straight to hell. Kennedy, though, had learned from the Bay of Pigs. He had learned, A, you don't take your military advisors' advice without criticizing it. And so he started to ask some critical questions. He started to ask, well, how do you know you'll hit all the nuclear weapons? Well, they didn't know they would get all the nukes because they didn't know how many Khrushchev had sent to Cuba and where they all were. And so Kennedy's got a problem. He could send his fighter bombers over and they can drop napalm all over the sites. And they can wipe out every site that they see. But how does he know that there isn't a nuclear weapon hidden in some mountain at the back of Cuba, aimed at an American city that he misses, and then all of a sudden America's hit with a nuke? So he was prepared to criticize his military advisors. He was prepared to criticize them, not to take everything they said on face value. And the second thing he realized was the lesson that Eisenhower had taught him. When you go to war, you go all in. It's all or nothing. You can't back down. And so he immediately realized, if I drop napalm on those missile sites and I kill thousands of Russian soldiers, Russia's going to fight back. Khrushchev will probably send his tanks into West Berlin in response. Allen via Cuba, Khrushchev will do something else, and before very long we'll be sending nuclear weapons at each other. He understood the risks. He realized that it wasn't Russia that was the enemy, it was nuclear war itself that was the enemy. He had to find a way of getting those nuclear weapons out of Cuba, but without going to war. He understood the nature of the problem. And so his advisors came up with the idea of a naval blockade. His advisors, he brought all the top men in the government into something called XCOM, the Executive Committee. And these guys decided to set up a naval blockade. And the idea was that they wouldn't attack Cuba. What they would do is they would stop the Russians from resupplying their troops, from resupplying those missiles. So they surrounded Cuba with 63 ships. They made sure that there were plenty of allies from South America. So other South American nations sent ships up. And they surrounded Cuba and they said no more Russian ships were to come through. We're going to stop that. The idea was to stop resupply without actually going to war. 10 a.m. Wednesday, October the 24th, 1962. The Americans sat in a room. The American president, his top advisor, sat in a room in the White House and listened and heard American naval commanders radio in that the Russian ships were turning around, that they were either stopping or turning around. One advisor said, listen, we just went eyeball to eyeball, and the other guy just blinked. What they didn't realize is what we now know is that 24 hours earlier, Khrushchev has decided, go right up to that line, but turn around, do not go through. Khrushchev was not prepared to go to nuclear war over Cuba. Khrushchev then sent a letter. He sent a telegram to America saying that if America agreed not to invade Cuba, he would pull out his nuclear weapons. He would take the nuclear missiles out. But then the next morning, another telegram came through from Khrushchev. And this one said, listen, if you promise not to invade Cuba, we'll take our missiles out. But you've got to take your missiles out of Turkey. Turkey is very close to America. And as a response to the previous crisis in Berlin, President Kennedy had put Jupiter missiles in Turkey. They were old missiles, they didn't have a great range, but they could strike Russian targets. And Khrushchev's saying, right, if you take those your weapons out of Turkey, let's do a fair exchange. You take your weapons out of Turkey, I'll take mine out of Cuba. Now, it might seem like a fair exchange to us today, but here was Kennedy's problem. Khrushchev had promised him that he would send no nuclear weapons or missiles into Cuba. He had promised him in front of the world he would not do that. And then he had lied. And he had basically snuck nuclear weapons in, set them up in Cuba, that had all the appearances of a sneak attack. Kennedy couldn't reward that sort of behaviour. He couldn't basically, if he was to say, okay, well, I'll take my weapons out of Turkey, he was basically saying, well, yep, if you do sneaky things in America, you'll get something out of it. He couldn't do that. At least he certainly couldn't be seen to do that. He couldn't let the American public, make the American public aware of that. But the other thing that Kennedy was very, very good at was hiding his weaknesses. Kennedy suffered from all sorts of medical conditions. He had suffered from extraordinary back pain. He had to spend most of his life being the presidency being injected with amphetamines from a guy who was basically a upper class drug dealer, nicknamed Dr. Feelgood. This guy injected him with all sorts of feel good drugs just to get through his day to day life as president. Yet he projected himself as the guy who was young and energetic and healthy. He was taking so many pills, if you shoot Kennedy, it rattled. He understood the power of deception as a president. His wife, Jacqueline Kennedy, was a beautiful woman. He always had Jacqueline Kennedy on his arm. They were always photographed together, the perfect couple. Kennedy was notorious for his affairs. He was at least with two other women on the night he was sworn in as president. So he understood the power of deception. So Kennedy and his brother came up with an idea. Khrushchev has sent two letters. The first letter says, guarantee that you will not invade Cuba, says Khrushchev, and I'll take my missiles out. The second letter says, guarantee you won't invade Cuba, and take your missiles out of Turkey, and I'll pull my missiles out. Kennedy and his brother simply ignored the second letter and responded to the first. They said, yep, absolutely, we'll take our missiles out. He sent his brother, Bobby Kennedy, to meet the Russians. And Bobby Kennedy says, yep, we will pull our missiles out of Turkey 1 year from now. But you're not allowed to tell people we've agreed to that. If you do that, we're going to end up at war. It was an extraordinarily tense moment. Because what had happened earlier that day is the Russians had shot down an American plane over Cuba, been shot down by a surface-to-air missile, and some American generals wanted the president now to go in shooting. But the Russians agreed. They agreed, yes, you give us a public guarantee that you will not invade Cuba, we will take our missiles out, and we'll keep quiet about the deal over Turkey. So by learning about the power of deception, which he had learned as a politician, he had effectively learned how to lie, but also his lessons from the Bay of Pigs, the first Cuban crisis. Don't listen to your advisors. Criticize them. Ask critical questions. Double check their plans. And also the lesson he'd learned from Eisenhower. When you go to war, you go to war all in. And if you're going to war with Russia, that means nuclear war. Kennedy was able to defuse probably the time when we came closest to a nuclear war in human history. It's possible that 30 million Americans would have died in the first day of war. Something like 2 to 3 times that in Russia. It would have been a devastating attack. But Kennedy managed to avert that. He managed to get the weapons out of Cuba. So far as he could tell, they were never actually allowed. Castro rejected the deal completely, wouldn't allow the Americans to look at it, but it certainly seemed that the weapons went away. He made America look stronger than Russia. He put America firmly out in the lead in the world's mind. In the mind of the world, Russia became the bad guy. It had been sneaky. It had broken its promises. It had put nuclear weapons on Cuba. He made America look strong and modern and reasonable. Khrushchev would lose his job in 1964, partly because of the mess he had got Russia into over the Cuban Missile Crisis. Kennedy would be assassinated in Dallas. That's what you're going to look at for your second piece of coursework. Who exactly was behind that? Who exactly was behind the assassination of John F. Kennedy?